Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. The email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, and it's also the YouTube channel, which I'm not going to read out the address because it's full of gibberish characters until I get my subscriber number up, which is a hint for you guys to go and subscribe on YouTube. But you'll find the links on the website. You'll find it in my Twitter bio. So go ahead and check out the videos I'm putting up on YouTube. And a quick reminder that in the next couple of days, you'll see a nice little video going up, specifically for Dynasty League guys, talking about the best NBA draft picks who are currently playing in Europe. So guys who have been Euro-stashed, basically. So that'll be going up in the next few days. So make sure you're checking out what's happening over on YouTube. But for today's podcast, we're back with another of the season in review series, and today we're going to be covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Thank you, Neil Young. Yes, it's time for me not necessarily to cough up the Bucks, but to talk about the Bucks and talk about the season that they had. And in all honesty, it was a remarkable season that the Bucks had. I didn't think Jason Kidd was a great coach. He wasn't good in Brooklyn for the start of his tenure, and he wasn't good in Milwaukee at the start of his tenure, especially from a fantasy point of view, but just constantly chopping and changing guys, making very little sense with his rotation. But then his explanation actually made sense. And his explanation was, you know what, I'm new to this team. I just want to see what guys I've got, which rotations work, who works where, who works when, all that sort of stuff. He did it. He was true to his word. And then he stuck on a stable rotation, and it worked. The Bucks got themselves into the playoffs. They took the Bulls to 6 in the first round from a team that finished with the worst overall record the season before. It's very hard to be critical of what the Bucks did. A tremendous improvement. And that's with their number one overall draft choice. Their number two overall draft choice, Jabari Parker, going down with that ACL injury and limiting him to just 25 games. So basically, they improved that much with pretty much the same roster for most of the season. We saw a big trade, which is marginally questionable. You could say it was questionable, but I think in the end, they got what they wanted, and that was Michael Carter-Williams in exchange for Brandon Knight. A few other little pieces coming across, like Miles Plumlee and Tyler Ennis. But basically, they wanted to get bigger at point guard, and that's exactly what Carter Williams brings them. And he's someone that Jason Kidd was very high on. So it's going to be an interesting situation in Milwaukee as this plays out. As now he's there for more than one season, he knows what he's got, and we'll see exactly what they're able to do moving forward. From a fantasy point of view, a team that was a pretty much a wasteland under Larry Drew the season before, they sported three top 100 guys and a number of other players who had long stints as real fantasy mainstays and hot streak sort of players. And you'd imagine they're going to have maybe a couple more next season as a few other guys play themselves into bigger roles. They also were distracted by the Larry Sanders mess, with him retiring from basketball due to his anxiety and depression issues. So all the best to Larry Sanders. And we'll probably never see him again in the NBA, so we don't need to talk about him too much in fantasy talk. Let's get into the teams. Let's get into the team, and let's start with the point guard. They started off the season with Brandon Knight, and he was putting up tremendous numbers, like top 50 fantasy numbers. Traded him out and brought Michael Carter-Williams over, who had a disappointing sophomore season. A lot of that you have to place on the fact that he was injured so much. He didn't have a great start to the season, and guys not having a good start to the season is one of the main things that causes down seasons, I reckon. If you miss preseason, you miss training camp, you miss the start of the season, it's so hard for guys to get back into a rhythm, and that's what happened to Carter Williams. He was out basically all of summer with that shoulder problem. He ended up playing 66 games. And overall, his numbers aren't too bad. 14.5 points, half a three, over 5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.7 steals, half a block for a point guard, which is great. But then you look at his percentages, 40% on 14 attempts and 70 from the free throw line, and a putrid 24% from three. They come out okay as numbers. Per game head to head, he was the 56th ranked player. I don't think many people would have necessarily thought he would have been that high. And he kept his numbers pretty steady post All-Star, so post trade, 57th as well. And Roto, he's obviously a lower player. 69th total for head to head, 90th total for Roto. Not that much of a difference, but a bit of a difference. But I think with a full off-season with Milwaukee, assuming he's healthy and doesn't have any setbacks and is ready to go, we'll see an improved Michael Carter-Williams next season. He remains a guy who's going to be a tremendous head-to-head fantasy guy, not so much of a tremendous roto guy. I don't reckon you're going to have to take him in the top 50 of draft next year, but I reckon he'll pretty comfortably finish inside the top 50. He's going to be a 65 to 70 or 80 sort of player because people are going to be just so upset with his percentages. That's fine. That's a legitimate technique to punt those percentages. And his free throw percentage is not that bad. It's 69% on 4.5 attempts a game. It's bad, don't get me wrong, but it's definitely not unrecoverable. You can easily make up for that. The 40% on 14 attempts is a little bit harder to make up for, but the free throws, it's not a necessary punt sort of situation for Carter Williams. So I think that he's in for a better second season. And you know, a better third season, but his second season in the end wasn't actually as bad as what a lot of people may have thought. Other point guards on the roster, well, I mentioned before, Tyler Ennis came across in the trade that brought Michael Carter Williams to what's the team called? Yeah, to Milwaukee. That's the one. Look, he was a rookie. He didn't do a huge amount. 350th ranked per game. Didn't improve that much after the trade either. He played 33 games, 13 minutes, but in the games where he was forced into bigger roles because of injuries to guys like Carter Williams or the other guys who were handling the ball, OJ Mayo, who handled the ball a little bit as well, Jorge Gutierrez, we saw Ennis put up some okay numbers. He averaged 3.5 points, half a three, 2.2 assists in 13 minutes. Percentages struggled, of course, but if he's ever pushed into a role where he is the primary backup, he will be the primary backup next season. If he's ever pushed into a role where he has to play 25 to 30 minutes a game, we can use him in a short-term sort of sense. Now, with the Bucks seemingly going, Carter Williams is the guy we want as the point guard for the future, I don't think there's ever really a chance that we're going to see Ennis become a real dynasty star, a top 80 or player or anything like that. I don't think he has that sort of potential. But deeper leagues definitely need to keep an eye on what Tyler Ennis is able to do. I mentioned Jorge Gutierrez. He played for Jason Kidd at the Nets, came across during the season. Not much to really talk about with him. 9 minutes a game, 2.7 points, 1.3 assists, 1.3 rebounds, 1.1 assists. A great shooting performance, 54% from the field, but it's in such a limited sample size, I don't think we need to worry too much about Jorge Gutierrez moving forward. He's also off the books this season, so look, the likelihood of him being retained is not all that high. Another guy who played some minutes at the point was Jared Bayless, one of the newer additions to this team. He was actually okay. He played 77 games, 7.8 points, half a three, 3 assists, 2.7 rebounds, 0.8 steals, great percentage, 88 from the line, 43 as a field goal guy. Yeah, not too bad. Overall, he was 208th per game, dropped a little bit post All-Star with Carter Williams in town. But overall, again, when he had to be pressed into action, we saw him put up pretty decent numbers. And that's all you can expect from these guys. We don't want someone being pressed into action and doing nothing. And Bayless, when he was given that chance, was able to do stuff. Now, he's not going to be someone with a massive ceiling that he's going to continue to get better. He pretty much is what he is at this point in his career. And that's a reliable backup who can play the one and the two and provide some scoring and be able to handle the ball and distribute the ball. And that's all good for this team, who is filled with a lot of young players, and someone dependable as Jared Bayless can be quite a useful asset for this team. In the other backcourt position, OJ Mayo was a complete disaster in 2013-14. Off the radar. Not even off the radar. He was just off the radar of anyone talking about good players. That's how bad he was. He was just not in consideration. He was like a broken man. He came back. He came back strong. He was ranked 124th for roto value, 142 for head-to-head. So, in that 14-team range, he was someone that you could have relied upon for most of the season. And there were definitely stretches where in 12-team leagues you needed to look at owning him. He played in 24 minutes off the bench, 11.5 points, 1.5 threes. He also can handle the ball. Almost three assists, 2.5 rebounds, 42 and 83 is his percentages. So not too bad from OJ Mayo. A nice, work himself into a nice bench role. And you think that that's going to be a good role for him moving forward. Playing playing on the off the bench, you know, being a shooter, being a scorer, being someone who can also handle the ball, and he's going to maintain that sort of 120 to 150 ranking, you'd think, you know, throughout the next few seasons. I don't think he's ever going to come back to being a top 100 type of player, which we saw in Dallas in 2012-13. But he looked a lot better last season. He lost a lot of weight, and it obviously helped him immensely get his game back to a respectable level. That's probably the best way of putting it. The other guys, now I don't really know what to classify these guys as. Actually, let's talk Jared Dudley first, because he was a write-off as a Clipper. He was disgusting. The Clippers traded him away and had to give away a first-round draft pick in order to get rid of him, and the Bucks said, thanks, we'll take him, and we'll take that first-round draft choice. And he was relatively steady. He started more games than he should have. I didn't think he should have started anywhere near the amount of games, but 24 minutes in 72 games. He hit a three a game, 7 points, three rebounds, a steal, 47 and 72. So not bad with his percentages, 183 in per game value. And that's right where he is. Like him, Bayless, all these guys, they're like 16 team guys that provide a ton of value, and they're going to get OJ Mayo as well. They're going to get this 22 to 23 minute role playing the combination of the 1, 2, and 3, and Dudley even playing some 4 as well. Just nice, solid backup unit, dependable NBA veterans that really help the young starters on this team. And Dudley fit that role brilliantly, and we use him in the appropriate situation for fantasy leagues. He's not a guy that's going to be, look, him, Bayless, Mayo, you're not drafting them in 10-team leagues. You're not drafting them in 12-team leagues, but you'll use them at times, and you'll definitely use them and draft them in deeper formats. The other two guys I was going to talk about were, what's their position? Chris Middleton, a real, real surprise this season. He was absolutely fantastic. He played 79 games, played 30 minutes a game, 13.5 points, 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, 4.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, just great roto numbers, 47 and 86 is percentages. For total roto value, he was the 33rd ranked player for the season. That's how good he was. Per game for head-to-head, it drops a bit down to 76. He was really strong down the stretch there, 58th. Down the last 2 months of the season, and his ability to get steals was just phenomenal. Yeah, a guy hitting 1.5 steals and 1.5 threes and chipping into those other categories and not hurting your percentages and hitting 41% from three is definitely a guy with tremendous value. Now, he is a restricted free agent, so we don't know what his future holds. We've heard some pretty big contracts bandied about that he's going to be a guy that commands over $10 million a year, which seems a lot, but he is a really important piece, and the Bucks seem really, really keen to keep him. 30 minutes a night for him. Look, if he stays in Milwaukee, no matter where he goes, if he's getting starters minutes like this, he has to be owned in every league. There's no doubt about that. For that combination of steals, threes, and just nice numbers across the board, and especially if you're in a roto league, you'll be able to get him at a real bargain because he's not going to be picked inside the top 50. But for roto leagues, he can definitely give you value inside the top 50. I don't think there's much doubt. Well, based on what we saw last year, that there's not a lot of doubt that he can produce that sort of value on an ongoing basis. Where Middleton ends up is going to be a real interesting subplot of this offseason for this team and for the rest of the NBA, because we do have the return of Jabari Parker, who was a starter and struggled early, as a lot of rookies do, but really started to come on strong late. 30 minutes a game, 12.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 1.2 steals, 49 and 70. So great percentage numbers, especially the field goal percentage as a rookie. Not something that you really expect. Didn't hit a lot of threes and only hit him at 25%, which is a little bit disappointing. I thought he'd at least to be at least be able to do that more than the 0.2 that he provided, which we didn't, we obviously didn't see. I think that's something that will come in his game though. Where did he rank on a per-game basis? We can't look at totals. 136 was his ranking for head-to-head leagues on a per-game basis, so that's pretty good for a rookie who was just starting to hit form. I don't know where we draft him next season. He was going anywhere between 60 and 80 last season. I reckon that you'll find, coming off the ACL, you'll probably be able to get him around 100, and I think that's pretty decent value. I think he'll start off slowly, definitely. Around the first month or so, he might not be anywhere near back to normal. But I reckon that by the end of the season, we see him putting up top 70 numbers pretty comfortably. I'm not going to be drafting him inside the top 70. I'd be looking at him around 90 to 100, I think, is probably the right area. But Dynasty Leagues, he's obviously a very highly sought-after guy who could easily be a top 20 player in 3 seasons' time, especially if he gets that three-point shot going. So Jabari Parker, someone to definitely watch out for next season. Coming off the injury, a lot of people may be a little bit hesitant, and you know, getting him around the hundreds might be a little bit of a bargain. It's a really hard one to predict at this point. You might see him slipping even further, especially if the Bucks do re-sign Middleton. People might think, oh, they're going to play Parker off the bench, because they do have an abundance of these tallish sort of guys. But I don't think there's really much a chance that Parker plays off the bench for a long period of time. So that takes me to this question that came through on Twitter from Mike Apotria, who's on Twitter at Apotria, phonetic spelling. Who do you think goes into next season playing the four, Parker or Giannis? I don't think it's Giannis. Giannis will start, but I think the ideal scenario that they'll have is Carter Williams, and then they'll play along the wings Middleton and Giannis, and then at the four they'll play Parker, and then they'll play at a center, which I'll get to soon. But I'd say that you'd see both Parker and Giannis starting next season alongside Middleton at the 2, 3, and 4, and then we have Carter Williams at the 1 and someone playing at center. So that would be the way that I think that they'd like to play their lineups. Now, we might see early on Parker coming back from the knee injury. We see someone else at the 4. We might see Ersan Ilyasova playing there. There's definitely a big chance of that happening. But it still remains to be seen exactly how he is recovering. Jabari Parker is recovering from his knee injury. All right, let's talk. Let's talk Ersan. Let's talk Giannis. Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of the internet's favorite players. And yeah, look, his numbers, they come out in terms of rankings pretty similar to Chris Middleton. 36 in roto leagues, 56 in head-to-head total value, but per game, 95th. It is his second season. He is extraordinarily young, but we saw what he can do. 12.7 points, 0.1 threes, which was a big decrease on his rookie season. He just didn't take threes, basically. Why would you when you're not shooting them well and you can get to the hoop in 2 steps? 6.7 rebounds, 2.6 assists, 0.9 steals, a block, 49 and 74. And those percentages are really, really strong for him. That's a big increase on his rookie season. He's easily a guy who's going to be over a steal and a block a game. He has 6.7 rebounds from a guy who's shooting guard eligible. He can push that further to 7, 7.5 comfortably. Go with 3 assists, you know, a steal, 1.2 blocks, 15 points. That's what we might see from him in the next two seasons, I would say. Per game, I said 95th. Didn't really improve down the stretch, 98th after the All-Star break. But that's fine. That means he's going to be drafted everywhere we know. The point is where is he going to be drafted? What are we looking at for him? I think he's a top 70 player, potentially a top 60 or 55 player next season. Dynasty, he's a top 30 guy. I think there's a ton of potential in him. If he gets that scoring up, you know, 15, 16 points, gets half a three, and then goes 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 blocks, 1.5 steals. That's extraordinary, and that's not completely out of reach of Antetokounmpo. So remember, his 2 seasons in, third year, is often a sign of guys having a massive breakout. I think he could be huge, and if you want to be bold, you take him in drafts earlier. You take him around 60, you take him something like that, and hope you get a top 50, a top 40 season out of him. It is not completely out of the question. We saw, you know, that he can put up really good numbers. We saw that Jason Kidd really does like playing him out there. He played in good minutes, and he got more comfortable. And the most important thing to me is that those defensive numbers, the steals and blocks were up, and the percentages were up. The other things will come. They're the things that, yeah, he will start to get more shots as this team evolves more. And I think he'll start to dominate more. We saw him dominating more on offense, in terms of not dominating, but dominating the ball and saying, yeah, this is mine, let me take it in, all that sort of thing. And I think that's, you know, only portends good things for Antetokounmpo moving forward. So I'm extremely high on him. I think it's going to be hard to acquire him in a dynasty league if you don't own him without paying a massive premium. So be careful. And if you can get a massive premium back in a trade, I'm okay with that, because there's still a bit of risk. He's not going to realize his top 30 type potential. But you just got to really weigh it up. And if you have a trade question, either way, send it to me, and I'll give you what I think. You know, my thoughts on, is this too much? Is it too little? Is it a bargain? Whatever it is, but just be really careful, because he's one of those players who is loved by a lot of people. Ersan Ilyasova, a guy who I have probably an exceptionally soft spot for. I think he's a really good player. He only played 23 minutes a game for the season, and overall his numbers don't look that great. 11.5, 1.33s, that's good. Almost 5 rebounds, 0.6 steals, 47 and 65, okay sort of numbers. And they come out at 204th per game. But where he excelled was post-All-Star. After coming back from the injuries, he was 116th and he was a must-own player. Now, it does coincide with Jabari Parker not being there, and I imagine with Parker fit, Ilyasova is going to go back and play 22 minutes. So if someone thinks they're going to see second half Ilyasova next season, I think they're kidding themselves. We might see it for a month if Parker's really slow to start, but he's going to go back to that bench role, and he's going to be part of that really good veteran bench unit. Mayo, Dudley, Bayless, Ilyasova, all those guys providing a really solid base for this team, really solid bench unit. I reckon you won't draft him in 10-team leagues and 12-team leagues. I reckon you probably won't either. He's more of a 14 to 16-team league guy, and that's with the return of Parker. If Parker's not there, then 12-team leagues definitely want to take notice of him, because he plays the minutes, he can put up the numbers, and we saw that again last season from Ersan. Let's talk big men now. And I had a couple of questions come in about the big men as well. Had one come in from Joey at Joey Deacons. Where does John Henson go from here? And Justin Fiorcal, who's on Twitter at JFiorcal. What does Zaza have left in the tank, and what will his role be in his contract year? He was surprisingly serviceable in the second half. He was more than surprisingly serviceable. He was fantastic. He was Jason Kidd's preferred player for the second half of the season at center. And his numbers, they look okay on the surface. 24 minutes, 8.5 points, 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.1 steals, 45 and 79. They're really good numbers. And he turned it up a notch, as Justin said, in that second half of the season. The last month, he was the 63rd ranked player in head-to-head. Overall for the season, 123rd. Really impressive. But what we saw in the playoffs is that Pachulia would start, and he would play no minutes, basically. And we'd see Henson get most minutes in pretty much, I think, 5 of the 6 games. John Henson was preferred, which is something that has never happened to John Henson over the last 2 seasons. Henson would always be a guy who'd have his minutes limited consistently, even when there was no big men around, which happened to Milwaukee this season. There was literally no big men around. But Henson would still get 20 minutes, 23 minutes. But in the playoffs, Henson was playing a lot better, and he'd get 30 minutes, he'd get 36 minutes, and he'd put up monstrous numbers. That worries me a little bit for Zaza's future for next season. As Justin mentioned, he is signed for one more season. I think he goes and plays that backup role at 21 to 22 minutes, and it'll be hard to take him in 12-team leagues, but he'd be quick to snap him up off the waiver wire if you see that he is the preferred option. I think he lasts in larger leagues where you need those nice rebounds and really good assist numbers from a center as well, which is something he provides. Now, on to John Henson, who, again, per minute generally puts up great numbers. Per game last year, 138th post-All-Star, so pretty solid. Never was able to establish himself, never got big minutes, was always restricted by coaching. Happened with Larry Drew, happened with Jason Kidd, and I thought, I've said it millions of times, Jason Kidd hates this guy, he won't give him minutes. And then we get to the playoffs, complete different strategy. Let's just play Henson as much as possible. He played just 18 minutes a game this season, but blocked 2 shots in 18 minutes. That's incredible. We look at per 36, that's 4 blocks a game, that's ridiculous. 7 points, 4.5 rebounds, 57% shooting. He could be a guy that is, if he got 30 minutes a game, he's a top 70 player pretty comfortably. I'd be pretty comfortable saying that. I don't know if he's going to get that, and I'm not drafting him in that area, but I think that he will get the bulk of the minutes this season because of that way that they started running with him in the playoffs. He's definitely like a pick between, say, 95 and the end of your draft. That's the area to take him if you're really bullish on him and you think that, he's going to be the guy who is the starting center for a big chunk of the season, then you go with him because you're going to get those elite blocks, good rebounds, decent scoring, good field goal percentage from a guy that you're picking around 90 to 100. If you're not convinced, leave it a bit longer and see how you go. But there is, the way that it turned at the end of the season makes me really encouraged for him next season. Hope I'm not burnt by it, but I am really encouraged to see what John Henson does next season. Two other big men on this roster, Johnny O'Brien, Job, did not, it was one of my more consistent rants of the season. Why the hell they would start Johnny O'Brien and play him 8 minutes? It was the ceremonial start that made absolutely no sense. Basically, the only games he'd play were games that he'd start, and he'd play, he averaged 11 minutes a game, 3 points, two rebounds. Second round draft choice from last season, absolutely disgusting percentages, 37 and 44. Nothing to really get too excited. I don't think there's a great future for him. He didn't really excite me when I saw him out on the court. Dynasty leagues, we're talking really deep. Don't expect too much to jump up from Johnny O'Brien. But you know, when you're 474th in rankings per game, there's only about two or three people less than that. You know that you're struggling. Now, Miles Plumlee came across, played some decent minutes in Phoenix. Not so much here. He's got to play behind Zaza. He's got to play behind John Henson. In the end, 4 points, 4.5 rebounds, 0.9 blocks with 54% shooting. It's hard to evaluate his numbers at 237th per game, but after he's traded 354th, the run of Miles Plumlee being a guy where you take at the back end of 12 team leagues is finished. I don't think we need to worry about him. Hopefully you're able to sell out of him in dynasty leagues as the trade went down for someone who thought he might get minutes. For now, he's got almost zero value stuck behind all these other guys on the Milwaukee roster. One other player that I do need to talk about, and I am probably a little bit irrationally excited about on this team, is Damian Inglis, the player who was picked at the start of the second round last season. Didn't play a game with that foot fracture, but he is going to be right. He's going to play in summer league, and I actually really like Damian Inglis. I think there's a lot to like about him from a fantasy point of view. Now, he's a wing player, so he's going to be stuck behind Parker, Adetokunbo, Middleton, but if for some reason we see Middleton leave, we could see Inglis sneak into a 15, 20 minute a game sort of role, build himself up and really start to prove himself and push forward into that position. So he's definitely, it's deep. It's the deepest of deeper guy we've never seen play. I do think there's a little bit there, and it is a crowded situation, but Jared Dudley's not going to be around forever. Jared Bayless isn't going to be around forever. Ersan Ilyasova is not going to be around forever. So maybe not next season, but the season after, I reckon we see some Damian Inglis action, and I'm going to be really intrigued to see him in summer league to see what he can bring to the table, because I just want to see him in action. I think there's a bit there. It's probably not going to challenge standard leagues for the next couple of seasons, but 16 team leagues in the next, or yeah, 8 to 20 team leagues in the next two seasons, Damian Inglis will probably, in my opinion, become a standard fixture in those sort of formats. So keep an eye on him. That's it. That does it for the Milwaukee Bucks preview. The next podcast is going to be on the New Orleans Pelicans. And remember to stay tuned for that video that's coming out regarding the best unsigned Eurostash prospects, especially for you deep Dynasty League guys. I've sent out some of the emails of applications for the Red Rock Dynasty League. Still a few more positions to be filled. So if you haven't heard, you still may hear from me in terms of if you're accepted into the league, but you'll hear from me either way over the next few days regarding the league. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but aside from the Red Rock Dynasty League, I'm going to be having standard redraft leagues as well. Depending on numbers, we'll have almost convinced we'll have 2 to 3 listener leagues running during the season, and it really depends on new guys. We could have a lot more than that. Really depends on who's interested in some standard redraft leagues, but we'll sort that out more throughout the off season as well. Don't forget to leave a review and subscribe to this on iTunes. Do the same on YouTube and Stitcher. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.